Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Steve.
What's up, man?
Live.
Sorry about that, bro.
From the Four Aces Studios, Four Aces Presents brings to you West Coast Bias.
What's up, man?
I have no clue what the hell just happened right there, but were you talking?
Nope. I've been sitting here chilling. I was going to give it a couple more minutes, and then I was figuring, you know, you probably were probably both a little hungover still, and I was just going to go grab me a stove and sit down and watch more football.
Oh, bro, I got up at 10 o'clock this morning and went and saw a movie and been going ever since. I just got back to my house. So, but yeah, I'm going to say big night last night. So bear with us if we seem a little draggy. but, you know, we were looking at last week, we looked at the 49ers and the Raiders as far as the first halves of the season. And you know, we spoke about what we expect them to do later on. What we'll open up with today then will be the current 14-game winning streak now of the Golden State Warriors after beating Chicago, which I thought was would be one of their toughest opponents at home or in their house, I should say. Swaz, your thoughts?
Who are we talking about?
I said the Dubs.
Oh, my bad. Sitting here, my brain is all in football. Dubs are on a winning streak, starting the season awesome. They go up against, I believe, Denver tonight, trying to extend the streak and to break the streak against the Lakers. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's just concentrate on them. Beating Denver in Denver, which is going to be a tough game. Denver usually plays pretty tough, but I think this Warriors team is focused and hungry. I think that the talk in the offseason about this team being lucky and winning the title and not really giving them their just due propelled them in training camp. And I would say that, you know, this team looks like it's geared up to try and make history. I think that's what they're focused on this year. You know, the end result is always going to be trying to win a title, and that's where their head is at. But at the same time, they're going to also take the time throughout this season. I mean, they're still so young. They don't need to be like the Spurs and rest players per se, although I'm sure towards the end of the season they may try to if the record kind of goes away to catch a couple losses here and there throughout the season. So, but if the record is still up for grabs at the end of the season, I expect them to play hard all the way through the end of the season and try and extend it into the playoffs, which I think would actually be a bit more beneficial.
And if they can remain healthy on their front line, basically meaning if they can keep Bogut, Green, Barnes, Thompson, and Curry all healthy, I think that they stand a pretty good shot at either at least tying, if not breaking the record. And you know, regardless of what Dennis Rodman wants to say, you know, Mr. Don't worry about the Warriors. Don't, you know, they're not that good anyway. You know, and let's say a good hello and welcome to Miss O'Malley.
Hey there. Sorry about that. I didn't realize what time it was. Thank you to school.
It's not a problem. We got a late start ourselves today, so. You're just joining the conversation. We're talking about them Doves. We're talking about this 14-game winning streak, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
I think it's pretty awesome, especially the other night when we played the Clippers and everybody was expecting us to win because we were down by 20 points at one point, which I don't understand at this point why people are still underestimating the Warriors. They came back from higher deficits than that and won during the playoffs. So, yeah, 20 points seems like a lot, but when you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on your team, 20 points ain't nothing. So
that's true.
They just continue to perform, and they continue to just beat all the odds. Yet you still have people out there like Charles Barkley wanting to open his mouth and give his two cents about how, well, in my time – they wouldn't have done this or that or the other. Well, in your time, players were hella selfish. Okay, mm-hmm. This is about the most unselfish team I have ever seen. You know, if you look at Steph Curry's, the look on Steph Curry's face when he's not even the one who made a play, but maybe he made it possible for someone else to make a play or someone makes an awesome shot. He's excited for them as he is when mm-hmm. he does it himself. And that's genuine. And that yep. is something that you didn't see back in the Barkley days and all of that. And I'm so sick of this, you know, this shooting team, this small team isn't going to do anything. Well, look at where we're at right now. I think we're starting to prove it wasn't a fluke. You know, and I know we're only 14 games into the season, but still, I mean, to start off, they've shown how many teams have actually gone on and done that, and we're right up there with some pretty amazing teams. And I just think, these guys just continue to amaze every day. And the thing, who was it, Steve Nash that was talking about what an amazing player and like what a true shooter and probably the best shooter he's ever seen, what he was saying about that, and it's the fact that Steph Curry hasn't even reached the top of his game yet. He's still improving, and they're talking about he still has improvements to make. Well, if he's playing like this right now and he still has improvements to make, you can only imagine what this kid is going to do in the future.
Exactly.
Move on from LeBron. There's a new best player in the world. I'm sorry.
No.
Period. It just, and he's unselfish. And he is as much about his team as he is about himself. And to be quite honest, I think he's more about his team than he is about himself. And the kid is an all around, like, this is the kind of role model you want for your children. This is the guy that you want your children to look up to, because if you look at what he does on the court and off the court, he is an all-around just good dude. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, look at his family life. Look at, I mean, he met his wife in a church youth group. And
how much more pure can you get?
Exactly. And I mean, but it's like, people say, I hear it all the time because there are things that I definitely don't agree with some players in the NFL, in the NBA, and they talk about, well, you have to separate what they do as a player from what they may do off court and off the field. But you really can't, because these guys are role models, whether you like it or not. So what they do off the field is as important, or off the court is as important as what they do on the court or
mm-hmm.
you know, on the field. Because, I mean, do you really want your kid looking up to someone like Greg Hardy? I mean, I know it's not basketball, but I'm just saying, it's like, I definitely would want my kid looking up to someone like Steph Curry 100 times more than I'd ever want them looking up to a player like Charles Barkley. I want my kid to learn what it's like to be a true sportsman, you know, sportsmanship. And I think if there is any team in the league that exemplifies what it is to have true sportsmanship, it's the Dubs.
Very true. Now, let's jump off subject here. And talk a little bit about, let's talk about what a role model is in sports today. Because I was reading an article a couple of days ago, and it kind of hit me in the right way, in the sense that they were talking about the fact that there aren't many role models in today's sports. If you look at the overall moral value, these guys, a lot of the time you have to do, like I tell a lot of people do, you got to learn to separate the athlete from the accomplishment. And I think we've learned to do that. We've learned to do that so well, or as a society, they've learned to do that so well that sometimes they lose track of the fact that there aren't many sports stars out there today that are actually will be considered good role models. If you put it in the framework of what a good role model should be, there aren't many of them out there at all. Steph Curry would be one of those.
Exactly. Derek Carr is another one. I think Derek Carr exemplifies what it is to be a true role model, and I hear what you're saying, people, because, I mean, I hear it all the time, especially being a Raiders fan. You know, I'm in a bunch of groups, and before the season started, a lot of people were like, pick up Hardy, pick up Rice, pick up this, pick up that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I have been a lifelong Raiders fan. I was a Raiders fan before I could even, like, walk and talk. I've got pictures in Raiders gear, okay? That's how long I've been a Raiders fan. But I made it very clear that if we were to ever pick up a player like Hardy or Rice, I would stick to college ball. I would never be able to be a fan again, because I cannot – to me, that is condoning the behavior of the player. And if you, especially in the case of Greg Hardy, he's obviously shown absolutely no contrition. In fact, he's done quite the obvious. The attitude and the statements and the rap video and the fact that he's getting in fights and arguments with coaches, he's getting in fights and arguments with, you know, some of the main players on the team, Dez Bryant, you know, to me, that shows that this kid hasn't learned anything. But unfortunately, the second that these guys put on a uniform, they become a role model. Whether they have the intention to or not, whether people think about it that way or not, kids see them. Kids don't necessarily know 100% what's going on, but kids see them and they see, you know, it's okay if I do all this crap, if I can ball out. If I have the ability to do something, then it's okay. And I don't think that that's necessarily right. There are some things that I don't think can be separated from the player and the person. Because at the end of the day, the player is the person. And what they do off-field affects who they are and how they're looked at and what, you know, they do on the field. And I just, there are some things that I don't think should be condoned. Now, as far as the Raiders go, I was really happy when Mark Davis finally came out and said and put a whole kibosh on the thing, because what had happened was Hardy's agent had used the Raiders. We had never looked at him. We had no intention of ever looking at him or wanting him or whatever. But because the Raiders had the money, they tried to use him. not the only agent to have done that in free agency, because the Raiders have the money. They're used as leverage in certain aspects. But Mark Davis finally came out and said there's no way, no how, no ever that we would pick up a player like him or Rice. They can't. They cannot do it and then turn around and support the Biletnikoff Foundation. How do you support a foundation that's based on the fact that Biletnikoff's daughter was killed in an episode of domestic violence? You can't sit there and support and throw the golf tournament for this foundation, but then have a player who, you know, the dude was found guilty because of some crazy laws that they have in North Carolina. Things went south, but yes, he was found guilty, and it wasn't an appeal. It was a crazy law that they've got on the books in North Carolina, but it's one of those things. Those are things I can't separate. Now, granted, there are other players who may not necessarily be, and I feel the same way about Ben Roethlisberger, because I hear all this. There is a lot of stuff going on right now because they say, oh, well, Ben got away with all of this stuff. I don't agree with that either. I'm not a Pittsburgh fan to begin with, but I cannot stand that man. So it's not just about Hardy or Rice or whoever, you know, McDonald. It's the Roethlisbergers. It's the team. It's the culture that has let these guys get away with this stuff and think that it's okay. And when that happens, you're showing these kids that it's okay. Whether people think that or not, that is what happens. These kids are seeing what these guys have done, yet now they're being allowed to play. They're coming back. They're not showing any contrition. First thing that goes through these kids' minds is, oh, well, damn, you know, it doesn't matter what my behavior is so long as I can ball out. And that's just, well, to me, it's not cool. You do have players like Derek Carr. You have players like Steph Curry, who those are the players I want to see. I would want to see my children look up to as role models. Now, yes, well, at the end of the day, it's a parent's responsibility to be like, okay, son, daughter, this is what's going on. Okay, you might not should look up to this person as a person. You might be able to say, wow, they can ball out, what have you. They're not necessarily the person you should look up to as a person. But how many parents these days are actually taking the time to do that?
And there is the central point problem. And that,
yes,
that was basically going to be what I was going to say. Is it's not necessarily because I think two people get too much wrapped up in the fact of that a child chooses who their role model is. Really, I've always said one thing first and foremost. If a parent is being a good parent, that parent is a role model to that child in the first place, and the first and foremost role model for that child. Now, in the case of absentee parents, of course, that changes. But in general, yes, I agree with what you're saying, that these guys are being looked up to, and they need to act and carry themselves as such. But also, the full responsibility is, at least as far as I'm concerned, falls upon the parent to direct their child,
yes,
to the proper role models, and not just allow them to be, you know, to idolize whoever they feel like looking at or watching or whatever. You know, like you said, I would never want my daughter to idolize any team like the Dallas Cowboys that would be willing to put a man who basically, like I said to Suave on this show before, that basically some mobster shit paid off, you know, got convicted and paid off his girl. Not to come to the appeal, you know, and some shit that, yeah,
well,
so some gangster shit
happened,
to get out of jail.
What happened with him was because of the laws in North Carolina, like in California, normally you get a bench trial or you get a jury trial. You don't get the option of both. If you choose for a bench trial, you waive your right to a jury trial. Well, some off-the-wall law in North Carolina isn't like that because he had a bench trial. He was found guilty. In fact, in some ways,
these kind of cases are better to go before just a judge, because they're more likely to look at it level-headedly than maybe some jurors. Because this is an emotional kind of situation, especially take away the fact that, you know, he's an athlete. But what happened was, I mean, he had a good lawyer. I'll give him that. He definitely had a good lawyer. But because of the laws there, he had nothing to lose by choosing a bench trial. Because when the bench trial didn't go how he wanted it to, he turned around and said, I want a jury trial.
Yeah.
Okay.
An appeal.
Well,
yeah.
So he waited to try to pay her off to see if he was actually going to get off. And at that point, this poor girl had been through so much. One of the charges against him was felony criminal threat. You don't think that there was some sort of threat going on in the process of paying her off not to show up? Absolutely there was. So, you know, exactly. He did some total gangster shit. And the problem that I have is that he's shown absolutely no contrition. None. It's not like, you know, I made a mistake, I'm sorry for what I did. No, it's been quite the obvious. It's like, I got away with this shit, and I'm going to be an asshole even more.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I agree, 110%, it comes down to the parents. Unfortunately, parents aren't always there. And then when these kids get to be teenagers, where they're not listening to their parent anyways, you know, they're
damn near impossible.
That much more... You know, you know, if a teenager ain't going to listen to their parent anyways. And that's when you get to the point where these kids start to be in relationships. And this, there are sad statistics about how many teen relationships are actually violent. And you just add things like this to it, and it just, to me, it makes it worse. And... I mean, I know that there are a lot of people that disagree with what I have to say, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. But, I mean, there are certain things that I don't think that you can separate from, you know, the player on the field versus the person off the field, because at the end of the day, they're one entity. So, yes, I'm super excited when I see a player like Steph Curry, or I see a player like Derek Carr, who, to be honest, I think is kind of the football equivalency of Steph Curry. Because they're both leaders. They're both very unselfish. They're both God and family first off of, you know, regardless what you believe about religion, because that's not what I'm trying to get into, but what I'm trying to say is they're wholesome. They're about their families. And if you see, like, if you see any of the interaction with these guys in their families, it's amazing. And none of the Raiders players have a single bad thing to say about Derek Carr. And look at the – I was super against Crabtree. Still not a fan as a person, but I see the turnaround that he's made since he's been a Raider. And I even saw the turnaround in the very short time that Aldon Smith was a Raider. And, well, he's still technically a Raider, and they want him back after his suspension. It's amazing what the environment can do for a player. And it shows to me what, you know, what they cared about in San Francisco. They cared more about what the player could do on the field than the player as a whole and what was going on internally with that player. What, Matt, who cares? Who cares if he's got demons, if he's a beast on the field? Well, you know, people forget at the end of the day that these players are still human and they suffer from human afflictions. And I think that it's important that wherever a player is that they are surrounded by people who understand that and who are helping them work through whatever, instead of, you know, exacerbating the situation and being an environment that really condones a lot of the behavior that gets these players in trouble in the first place.
Now, I do have to step in here in one state. First and foremost, Alden Smith was given every chance in the world by the San Francisco 49ers to turn his act around. He was put into rehab multiple times and was given every chance in the world. Alden's problem, and Raiders fans are about to learn this, is having too much time off and nothing to do.
It's going to be bad. And so
I'm hoping that since being with the Raiders, he has turned his off-the-field mentality around. So that does not happen. He can come back to the silver and black and help out.
But you have to look, though, I'm not just looking at Alden Smith. I'm looking at some of the other players and the behavior that it was an environment that really didn't care about what some of these players were doing. They were, in a sense, and I'm not saying right now, but I'm saying kind of before this season, because look at everything with McDonald, okay? I truly believe, and any Niner fan can disagree with me on this, but I've got backing from other Niners fans on this. I truly believe if it hadn't been a point where the Niners saw the writing on the wall that they knew they weren't going to the playoffs, they wouldn't have dropped McDonald when they did. They would have waited because they had already been waiting.
It wasn't his second offense, it was at least his third offense.
But they proved
just like with Alden Smith, they have a tendency to give people too many chances. And I think his ultimate fallout and failure in Chicago proved that the Ray McDonald situation was a Ray McDonald problem, not a 49er culture problem.
Absolutely, like, but it was a culture that cared more about what the players could do on the field than what they were doing off of the field.
I can agree with that, just based off the fact that they didn't release these guys at first offense. And you want to set a zero-tolerance message by just cutting guys. You get involved in a domestic violence situation,
that's the thing. That's the thing that really got me, because Harbaugh had made this huge speech. It's very public, this speech that he had made, I think, towards the beginning of his tenure, about how if you get into trouble, call me. There is nothing I won't get you out of except for one thing. The moment you put your hands on a woman, you are done on this team. But I never saw that. You know, so it's now we are starting to see more with what's going on with them, although sadly what's going on with them is not so great right now. But I think that they are trying to change that culture of, it really was that, you know, until it gets super blatant, as long as you're doing your job on the field, we don't necessarily care what you're doing off the field. It's once it started getting really blatant that becoming an issue. But if you look at it, you know, it used to be the Raiders players, the Raiders fans who had the highest arrest records. It's now flip-flopped.
Well, now hold on though. But that exact example proves the point I'm about to make, that this is a league-wide problem with everything.
Oh yeah.
Depending on what you do will determine what your level of punishment are, and depending on what your production is on the field will determine whether or not you stay on this team. Because Ben Roethlisberger can be accused of rape and start the following Sunday, then this is a This is a culture that spans all 32 teams. Because I love the Raiders too, but I really doubt that if Derek Carr, which God forbid he ever does or ever will, I don't believe he ever will, but if Derek Carr got himself into a situation like that, I doubt the Raiders are cutting him with the first offense. They're going to give him an opportunity to straighten his shit out and get his shit together before they move on
from
him.
It's not just an opportunity. It's actually giving them a real chance and actually not just saying that you're supporting your player. Because, yeah, I get the whole thing with Alden Smith. He went to rehab how many times, this and that. But it has been said by more than one player, by more than just Alden Smith, that while there was a show of support, that support didn't really actually exist. Now, whether or not that's the case, I mean, I get what you're saying. This is a league-wide problem. Look at the Cowboys, not just Greg Hardy, but look at who they've got their team and the things that they've done. Who's the one that was in the accident that ended up freaking killing someone?
That was Brown.
And the thing that actually that was almost laughable to me when they picked up Hardy is the fact that Jerry Jones' daughter is on that new commission, the conduct committee, which I thought was really kind of hilarious and kind of it seemed like a conflict of interest as well. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, like, I know I've had friends who've said, well, you know, he can ball out. Ray Rice can ball out. And I'm sitting here going, you guys have daughters. Would you want those two people dating your daughters?
Well, because
you don't want them dating your daughters, I don't want them anywhere near my team.
The difference between Greg Hardy and Ray Rice is talent. When Ray Rice ran into his domestic violence issues, Ray Rice was averaging like 2.5 yards a carry amongst the bottom like four running backs in the league.
Right.
And Greg
right.
Hardy
he,
just
he,
came off of 10-15 sack season. I'm not saying it's right. Like I said, I agree with you. I think Hardy should never be allowed to play in the league again. But I think that was the difference between him getting signed and Ray Rice being shoved to the side.
Because
Ray Rice was considered old and beat up.
Because he had been coming off an injury and he hadn't been having a good season. And people talk about the video and then they talk about everybody got up in arms after the second video. As far as I'm concerned, personally speaking, the first video that they showed said more to me than actually seeing him knock her out. Because you know what that second video, that first video showed to me where he was dragging her out of the elevator and kicking at her? That showed me that was not the first time that that had happened. Because that is not the action of someone who that's happened for the first time. If that had happened for the first time, his reaction would have been completely different. It would have been, oh, my God, what have I done? Please wake up. Are you okay? Not, oh, my God, you are such an inconvenience. I'm dragging your unconscious body out of the elevator, and I'm kicking at you to wake you up. That is not the action of somebody who had done that for the first time.
Yeah.
And I saw the interview. I listened to her talk, and I called bullshit on the whole thing. I'm sorry, that's not the first time that something like that's happened. Because things don't go from 0 to 100 like that in the first instant. It doesn't happen. And people say, well, you know, with Rice, it was because it was caught on video. But I actually agree more with what you said. It's because, I mean, and I hate it, but Hardy's come out and been a beast on the field again after missing, you know, what,
almost
20
a year.
Games? No,
yep.
19 games
because
he played one game. If I was Carolina, I'd be suing him for that $13 million, but that's a whole different story, you know. But 19 games he missed. And he still came out and balled the way that he's balled, which I really, I hate to say it, I had hoped that he had come out and sucked. Because that just would have been poetic justice. But that's not what's happened. And unfortunately, because of how he's played, they've also tolerated some stuff. Like, I mean, look at what happened on the sideline with the coach when he wasn't happy. You know, and look at how Jerry Jones, what Jerry Jones has gone on and said about certain things about Dez Bryant, and you know how Dez Bryant went off because of how they were playing, and he was unhappy about certain things. And Jerry Jones and the coach came out and said, you know, they spent an entire press conference almost about how what he said was wrong and he needs to learn this. Yet when Hardy attacked the coach, when Hardy fought with Dez Bryant, when Hardy had some of the stuff that happened before he even started playing, they defended him to the hilt. Oh, he's just a passionate player. Okay, something is wrong with that situation to me. And to me, that actually really does kind of prove your point. Because at that point, Hardy was balling out and Dez Bryant was sitting on the bench. You know, there's something wrong. There's something inherently and morally wrong about all of that to me. But, and I know people will sit there and say, oh, well, it's because you're a female. You get emotional about these kind of things. No, I'm a person, and when something is wrong, period. You know, yes, I'm a female, so some of these things, some of the things that they've done do necessarily affect me a little bit more than maybe a male player because, or a male person, because person isn't necessarily going to 100% understand some of these things. Yes. I get that. But at the end of the day, it's about being a player and being a role model, because whether you like it or not, whether it's right or not, whether parents are doing their job that they should be doing or not, the second these players put on a uniform and get on that field, they become a role model. Especially if it's a good player and they are balling out, okay? They're a role model, period.
Well, they're center stage. And when they're center stage,
there's also something wrong with me with the punishment in the NFL these days, because to me, what Goodell and the everything going on, you know, with the punishment right now, as it stands, is it's like, it's cool to beat your girl so long as you don't smoke pot. You know, you've got players getting, and granted, it's for multiple offenses, but still, I don't think in any way, shape, or form, and granted, these players are saying it's pot. We never know for sure what these players are testing positive for, whether it's, you know, we'll know if it's they're being, you know, suspended under violating the performance-enhancing drug, or if they're being suspended because of the drug abuse policy. We'll know that, but as it's written, we will never know why they actually, what it was that they got suspended for, because the NFL doesn't release that. Now, the players or the players' agents may come out and say, oh, it's because it was pot. Oh, it's because it was Adderall that he's been taking since he was 16. Well, then why doesn't he have an exemption? They make exemptions, you know, for these players. And because I know as far as, like, the whole Adderall thing goes, because Richard Sherman made that really, you know, famous. And people are like, well, there can't be that many players. It just seems like too high of a percentage. Well, the thing is for a lot of these players when they were kids, that when they were hyperactive, what happened? What did their parents do? They put them in sports. So it's not unheard of that there is an abnormally high percentage of players in professional sports that do have ADD or something of that nature. Because parents, I know, I was put in everything possible because I was overactive. And that's what a lot of parents do. And in some ways it's smart because it's a lot better than, I think, medicating your child. But it's not unbelievable that there is an abnormally high rate of players that have ADD or something to that nature. The thing that is kind of where it gets shady is the fact that these players know from day one that if that's the case, if that's a medication that they're taking and they have a legitimate reason to be taking it for, there are exemptions. There's ways to get exemptions, and there's no reason why any of these players, especially if they've been taking it for God knows how long, should not have an exemption.
Yeah.
But we kind of got off topic. We went from, like, Greg Hardy to, like, the drug abuse policy. My point is I think that it's wrong that some of these players are getting suspended for more games for violating the drug abuse policy than someone who, I mean, if you've seen the pictures now, because they finally released everything from the whole Hardy incident, if you've seen the pictures of her and you still want to sit there and tell me she was full of shit, then something's wrong with you. And I'm saying in general you, because there were people that wanted to argue with me. People want to talk about all the time, oh, it's about the money. It's always about the money. That's all they're out for, what have you. No, it's not always about the money. Now, granted, when they do end up taking the money, they do make it look bad for the rest of the people. But in her case, I understand. Dude, she was scared of him. She's in hiding. Nobody knows where she is. So call it what you want, but if you read the evidence from that case and if you look at all the photos and you still want to sit there and tell me that it was about the money, then something's wrong with you. You know, then you can't see common sense. You can't read and understand something for what it is. But back to the whole role model thing, especially, like, the two people that really have shown out for me these days have been, as far as basketball is concerned, Steph Curry, and as far as football is concerned right now, you've got Derek Carr. Derek Carr has been a leader since day one, since his rookie year. These guys gravitate around him. He is that much of a leader, and you can see it. On the field, off the field, his work ethic is amazing. Just like Steph Curry. Steph Curry's work ethic is amazing. The whole Warriors team, I think the Warriors as a whole are amazing role models. Because they are showing, people talk about, oh, I read an article the other day that maybe they're too unselfish. But it's like, you know, that's what you want. You don't want players out there who, I know this is not going to be a popular opinion amongst at least one of you when I say this, they're not like Kobe Bryant, who it's about Kobe Bryant. It's all about Kobe Bryant, you know, and the rest of the team are supporting cast for Kobe Bryant to do what he wants to do. There's been a lot of people that have come out and said that he's not the best team player, he's a ball hog, he's this, he's that. On the same note, I'll turn around and I'll say something about LeBron. Now, don't get me wrong, up until the finals with the Dubs, I was a huge LeBron fan. I loved LeBron. I thought how they treated him in Cleveland when he decided to leave was terrible. And I've always thought that he was an amazing player. I lost a lot of respect for him during this whole finals series, especially when they won the game at the Coliseum, or, you know, at Oracle. and you can tell how old I am when I want to call it all the Coliseum. But when they won the game, and they wanted to talk about how much crap and the things that the Dubs fans had said to him, yeah, that happened after he showed some really terrible sportsmanship and spiked the ball like a madman in front of some honestly crushed Warriors fans. And I just think, okay, I get it. You're excited, you're happy, you're whatever, but that went a little too far. That whole, like, turning into a beast and, yeah, okay, you won a game. There's going to be four more, you know? It really bothered me. It rubbed me the wrong way. The whole best player in the world thing also rubbed me the wrong way. It's one thing when the rest of the world is calling you that, but when you start looking at yourself like that, yes, have confidence, but there is a line. Okay, yeah. When you sit there and start talking about, when you start talking about yourself in the manner of being the best player in the world. Now, granted, I'll give him some props with what he's come out and said about Steph Curry this season, and he knows that it's basically his time to move over, because Steph Curry, basically, he's the man. Because, I mean, to me, he's an all-around player. He's an amazing. He doesn't get enough credit for being as good of a defensive player as he is, because people see the type of offensive player that he is, and they kind of forget that, you know, there's a lot of defense in his playing as well. Is same thing with the entire Dubs team. You know, that's all they wanted to talk about was their offense, when they honestly had the best defense there was as well. So, I mean, as a whole, I think that the Dubs are an amazing, I mean, for any young sports team coming up, whether it's, you know, a Pop Warner football team or a elementary school or CYO basketball team, I think that they are an amazing role model, because they show all the way around what it's like to play as a team, where they really all look at themselves as equals, regardless of whether or not they have the NBA's MVP playing for them right now. They look at each other as they're all equals. You know, they're brothers. And that's how they look at it. And I think that that is the best example you could give to any younger generation, any team coming up, that is how you play a sport.
Sure. All right, guys. So we're going to kind of do this show a little special way today, and we're going to go ahead and take that commercial break now. We'll come back with Swaz Take, another commercial break, and we'll do a little Rise of O'Malley, and then we'll close off the show covering these two Bay Area teams in their football games today. You're listening to the West Coast Bias right here on the Four Aces Network, blogtalkradio.com.
This is the Saint.
And Double K.
And we are the founders of
Four Aces Presents.
Each and every week we have shows of a different type, something for everybody, from music
to sports
to culture
to pro wrestling
and also spoken words. So if you want it here, we got it for you, folks. And that's every single day. Jumping off. This is Four
Aces
Presents. Peace.
All right, Mr. Suave, there you ain't have much to say today. So go ahead and take it away with Suave's take.
All right, so yesterday I was asked what I was going to do my opinion piece on, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to talk about the Warriors and how great they're doing and how everything is all sugar and spice and everything nice, and I'm going to switch gears and talk about these Oakland Raiders. Today's game, smooth, pissed, me off. You know, I got on the play calling a handful of weeks ago, and they improved. And then I turn on today's game, and I'm excited because we're facing a team that just beat the Packers by kicking a bunch of field goals. So I'm thinking, okay, well, their offense is scuffling. And hopefully, you know, if we come to play and the play calling is good, you know, defense should be able to hold Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson. And Eric Ebron is dropping passes right and left, and they don't really have a running game. So this should be a pretty good victory. No. You know, in the thick of a wild card chase and trying to stay relevant in the playoff race, you know, the Raiders on offense coughed this game up. Now, I've got Raider fans and a bunch of groups that I'm in, and everybody was complaining about the defense, this and the defense, that. But you know what? The defense went out there and only allowed 18 points. Now, the record for least amount of points in the season is like an average of 14. So they were 4 points off of that. So the defense played outstandingly great. The problem, again, is the offense. You know, they go from being inspiring to being uninspired on the play calling. I can't even understand what the hell they're doing. I don't know. You know, where the hell is Marcel Reese at? If he's not hurt, why the hell isn't his ass on the damn field? Why aren't we using him? A viable weapon. Again, nowhere to be found today. Not even used in the game plan at all. Why does Del Rio keep his damn challenge flag in his pocket on a first down catch by Michael Crabtree? And this is a little side tangent. The NFL has got to clean up what the fuck a catch is. It used to be so simple back in the day. He catches the ball doesn't move in his possession, 2 feet down, go out of bounds, that's it, a catch. Now you have to control the ball up until the point where you hand the ball to the official, even if the play has been dead for 10 seconds. I don't understand this bullshit. The NFL really needs to clean that shit up, because today's call that went against the Raiders, where initially it was called a catch, and then the second official comes in and says, oh, well, you know, Crabtree went to the ground and had the ball firmly with one hand and then fumbles it when it hits the ground, and they say, oh, well, now it's not a catch. Now, I'm sorry. 2 feet down, and then you step out of bounds. Second you step out of bounds, the play is over, and what it is what it is. Not 2 feet out of bounds, not a couple steps out of bounds, not falling out of bounds. You know, so that just killed the momentum. And instead of Del Rio throwing the challenge flag, he just kept it going. I just couldn't believe it. I'm sitting here screaming at my TV, throw the fucking flag. But no. So, of course, that kills the momentum. And if anybody that knows anything about football understands, momentum is a huge aspect of the game. Huge. Now, as a Raider fan, the Raiders didn't even start to regain momentum until the second half. The second half of the game. That's how long it took them to actually get on an offensive roll again. My team is very young. Derek Carr is very young. Amari Cooper is a rookie. Crabtree, he's no spring chicken, but he's found the fountain of youth as a Raider. And the defense has some young pieces. And this is a growing process. And we just went from not even being in the playoff talk to being in the playoff talk just this year. So it's a work in progress, and I can take that. It's the growing pains that pain me. You know, this team is on the verge of being a consistent playoff team, a relevant team in the NFL. But if the play calling can't sustain momentum for this team, I mean, by the end of this season, starting next year, this team needs to be consistent offensively. I'm not asking for touchdowns every possession. I'm not asking for Derek Carr to go out there and get me 4 and 5 touchdowns every game. I'll take 3, 4 field goals and 2 touchdowns. That's perfectly fine. But we need to move the damn football. The defense has been playing halfway decent this year, and the more we can keep them off the field, the fresher that they'll be. I just don't understand what's going on with the play calling. I mean, the fullback, Oswale, he had a couple of decent runs, but then on second down, you give it to him. On third down, you call a wide receiver pick screen? For real? Why? Now, I know some fans will be like, well, you know, Cooper did have a couple of drops. Yeah. I'll give you that. We had a couple of drops. Still doesn't excuse the lack of good play calling to put him in the better position to actually make the play. So it's a growing process. I'm trying to keep my calm. I went off on this tangent a couple weeks ago, and they made some strides moving forward. But it needs to be consistent. Take some chances. You can't continue to do this small dink and dunk style role with Derek Carr. You've got to unleash the offense. And once they do that, the defense will be able to step up because they'll be fresher throughout the game to be able to make plays. Today, yet again, for the third time this season, or maybe even fourth time this season, a very winnable game becomes a loss because of the offense not being able to put points up on the board in critical situations. So hopefully looking forward to next week and in the weeks going forward, the Raiders will be able to build on consistency. And starting next year, we'll actually be able to see, you know, more progress in that direction. So that's been my piece. Just had to go off about them Raiders. I wanted to talk about your Dubs, but until you lose, I really don't think we have to. So I'm just going to, you know, go Dubs, go.
What's good with the planet Earth, and you are listening to NVT West, where the West Coast music lives. This is The Saint, and I want to go ahead and tell you about the original Now versus Then, where Generation X meets Generation X, hosted by two wonderful hosts every other Monday. On one Monday, you got Robin Baxter, poetically known as the host, and then on the other Monday, you have the one and only Mother Metaphor. That's every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And y'all, just to let you know, once again, it's still Generation X from Generation Next.
All right, O'Malley, it's your turn to take the mic and let them know there is the rise of O'Malley.
All right, well, Swab kind of took a bunch of what I was going to say. So I definitely agree with his whole sentiment. I'm surprised that people in my apartment complex did not call the police. I was screaming at the TV so loud today. There's no reason right now that the Raiders shouldn't be 6-4 or 7-3, honestly, instead of where we're sitting at right now. And the majority of those games were within 3 points. And although one of those games was the defense's fault, and Charles Woodson even came out and said that there's no reason why the defense, why the offense throws up 35 points and we don't win the game. That's very true. So I agree wholeheartedly with what he said. It's really frustrating. They need to let the kid just let his arm loose. He's got a cannon, and he can throw, and he can throw with accuracy. So let it loose. With that being said, I'm going to switch gears to the other team in the Bay Area and talk about Kaepernick for a second. It's come out. Looks like Gabbert's going to be the Niners quarterback for the rest of the season. Kaepernick is out. He's having surgery on Thanksgiving for a torn labrum. Okay, folks, let me just say, I'm suffering from a torn labrum right now. It's a common injury when you've had repeated shoulder injury. I ruptured my tendon quite some time ago. My shoulder's been dislocated at least 5 different times. Anyone who's dislocated anything knows that once it's been dislocated once, it's super easy to dislocate again. Well, the labrum, tearing the labrum, is a common injury when you've had that much damage done to your shoulder. What I don't understand is it's in his non-throwing arm. So that's honestly an injury that should be able to be played through. My injury right now is in my right arm. I'm right-handed. I do everything with my right arm. Granted, and I still go to the gym and I still do my workouts, and maybe I shouldn't be doing some of that, but if it's torn, it's torn. You can do surgery, but surgery is not necessarily going to do a whole lot for it. It'll end up happening again. So at this point, what I'm kind of looking at it as is an excuse more than anything. It's his way of saving face, maybe. It's the Niners organization way of saving face, maybe. But now the big question in Santa Clara, a.k.a. San Francisco, whatever you want to call it these days, is whether or not they're actually going to keep him on the roster. Because if they keep him on the roster, it's about a $12 million decision. So do you keep him on the roster or not? What's going to happen with him? What's going to happen with the Niners? It's right now with Blaine Gabbert, is of all people. I just thought it was very interesting that it's now that he's deciding that he's going to have surgery on an injury where, unless it's super severe, surgery is not really necessary. It's not necessarily going to do, you're going to have as much rehab time, because they're talking about 4 to 6 months rehab time. You're going to have as much rehab time if you have the surgery as you would have not having the surgery. So I question motives behind all of this, but I'm a Raider fan, so I guess I'm going to question the motives of the Niners regardless. It's kind of sad to see how things have deteriorated over there, but it'll be interesting to see. For me, my biggest question, my biggest curiosity is whether or not they're actually going to keep him on the roster. That decision will probably be made within the next week or two. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, hey, that's just my opinion, since Swab took most of what I wanted to say about the Raiders. Mine is pretty short today.
Hey, what's good with the planet Earth? And you are vibing with the original Now Versus Then, where Generation X meets Generation X. My name is The Saint, and I want to go ahead and welcome you over to the next revolution in the West Coast music. And I'm talking about NVT West, where the West Coast music lives. And that is every Wednesday at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, where we chop it up about the music. Anything that's relatively to the West Coast, from the bottom of San Diego all the way up to Vancouver, Canada. You feel me? Because it's all about the West. We want to let y'all know that we are still alive and we are still kicking. And we got some of the best of the Bay, some of the best of L.A. and beyond. So dig it in with The Saint and The Collective on Now Versus Then West, where the West Coast music lives.
All right, just some quick notes. Don't forget, guys, tomorrow night, special edition Raw Impact Unleashed with your boy Cole and K-Double, bringing you that Survivor Series knowledge. We're going to be going on live right after Monday Night Raw goes off the air about 8 o'clock. So be sure to listen in. That's tomorrow night, 8 p.m. East, or 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Now, back to the sports talk. I'll be honest with you, just to kind of give you my take on that, since the Kaepernick situation was brought up. Yeah, He was put on the IR not because of the injury, but simply because of the fact that he needs to take the rest of the season off. They're not going to start him again. They're not going to put him in harm's way. They're going to let him sit down for a season, see if he can bounce back next season. They have a full training camp before they have to make a choice about whether or not they're going to release him. They're going to explore some trade options, see if anybody wants that $12, $14 million contract of his. If they can find something, they'll probably take it. But odds are he'll still be on the roster next year, and he'll still have his opportunity to come back and start. And if he doesn't show it, he'll be cut, and they'll save $9 million underneath the cap. This situation really isn't that complicated because of the contract that they signed cap to that's so team-friendly and allows them to be able to move on from him at any time that they feel like it and not really take a huge hit to their cap. He was put on the IR simply because of the fact that they don't want him to start the season. They don't want him to start for the rest of the season. His confidence is shot after the way he started at the beginning of the season. And instead of having him sit on the bench, they might as well have him sit away from team activities. He wasn't going to start again at all this season anyway. So why have him out there every week when you're not going to use him? So I think that's the whole ideology behind putting him in IR and getting him just away from the game altogether. See if he can go get his head back together. Maybe revitalize his career next year. Oakland Raiders, 18-13 loss. Both of you guys have kind of covered it. For those who didn't know what they were talking about, they took a loss to the Detroit Lions. Like Swab said, a very winnable game that the Raiders should have been 35-18, should have been the final score. Detroit's defense is not that good. Oakland's offense stalled. You heard all the reasons laid out by Swab for you. Here's the question I'm going to pose to you two about this game before we move on to San Francisco's ass-whooping that they're taking in Seattle. And that's, where do the Raiders go from here? This season is 4-6. Hey, an ass-whooping is an ass-whooping, whether you're a fan of the team or not. When your team takes an ass-whooping, you own it. You know, you don't sit there right and try to come up with an excuse. You just own it. But unfortunately, outside of you two, there's not many in Raider Nation that like to do that. But I'll give props to you two for being able to do it. just the same, well,
but
say,
I don't sugarcoat shit. I mean, it is what it is. That shouldn't have happened. We should have won the game against Detroit. In fact, I believe that when we did all of our predictions at the beginning before the season actually started, I think every single one of us thought that we would win that game.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason we shouldn't have won that game. Detroit didn't beat us. We beat us. And that mm-hmm. is what's most frustrating about anything. It's one thing if you go out there and you're beat by a superior team. But if you go out there and you beat yourselves, that's more frustrating than anything, period.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no reason we should not have won that game. 100 times over, there is no reason we should not have won that game. And it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating to see. I mean, it was frustrating in the game against Denver because we could have won that game. But at that point, that was a Denver team that was still a pretty good Denver team. Right now, we've dropped the ball on games that we should have won. There is no reason we shouldn't have gone out there and won them. We can sit here and say all that we want. Well, we've got a young team. You know, we've got a new wide receiver who has a drops problem. Well, you know what? If you look back at Jerry Rice and a lot of the big, huge wide receivers who became something, they had drop problems in their rookie season too. Okay, they're adjusting to what's going on. That's not an excuse. I'm just saying people are like, oh, well, he keeps dropping the ball. You act like it's like some foreign concept for a rookie wide receiver to drop a ball. Okay, it's like Swab was saying, when Crabtree makes catches the way he makes them and he gets his feet down and it should have been a catch and it's ruled an incomplete pass is what really gets me. It gets me, one, because we missed the first down. It gets me, two, because that should have been a catch. And it gets me, three, because that is quarterback percentage, and that's not fair. It's not fair. And, I mean, at least I have to say this week we didn't have an announcer who made this stupid comment of Crabtree in his ability to suck in the ball. Do these guys listen to what they're saying before they even say it? Seriously. But where do the Raiders go from here? As far as I'm concerned, we still have the ability to have a winning season. You know, we still have 6 games left. It's not like, you know, oh my God, it's the end of the season. We just have to have that turnaround. And, you know, the whole momentum thing isn't just during a game, it's during a season too. Because you can have that one game that turns around the entire season, that gives your team the confidence that they need to go on for the rest of the season. Just like that play for the rest of the game, you've got that game for the rest of the season. So what's really going to be telling here is their ability to come back home and kind of shut out everything that happened, learn from it, which we have a quarterback who has an innate ability to learn from his mistakes. He really does. He takes everything out there that's done and learns from the good and the bad, and that's amazing because he can see where he's gone wrong. There's a lot of quarterbacks in the league right now that either, one, don't have the ability, or two, don't have the balls to see where they've gone wrong, adjust, and fix it. So, I mean, if anybody can do it, I think he can. But I also think that the coaches need to allow him to. They need to allow him to just go out there and throw the ball. You know, yes, it's great to have a run game, but man, this kid's got an arm and he finally has some receivers. Let him throw. Give him the opportunity. Because when he's been given the opportunity, he's done some pretty amazing things. So, I mean, I think we still have the ability to go out there and have a winning season. It just depends on how they recover from this game.
Sure. Swap, your thoughts. Swap.
Well,
there.
They're on the outside looking in on the playoffs. They've got to win out to really, you know, have an opportunity to be one of the wild card teams. You know, 9-7 isn't going to do it. That means they could lose one more game. So they cough up another game, which I'm sure they will because they're going to play Green Bay, who will be fighting for their lives. I'm not sure about the Bronco game. If it's going to be Osweiler, I give them an opportunity. If it's Manning and he comes back healthy, I expect him to, you know, have one last hurrah of beating the Raiders before he goes off into the sunset. So it's an uphill battle. I like the strides moving forward, but I'm thinking right now 9-7 is probably where they're going to end up. With the way that they've been coughing up games that they shouldn't have been coughing up, there's a very good chance they could end up 8-8. So I hope that's not the case. I hope that they're able to string together some victories and learn from their mistakes, and hopefully the playbook can be opened up more, and that would allow the team to succeed more. They need to get back to using all of their weapons. You know, I need to get back to seeing Marcel Reese on the field, the walking mismatch. So I'm thinking, you know, high end, they went out, they go 10-6, get a chance to fight for a wild card. Low end, honestly, with the way that they're coughing up games, they could go 7-9 or 3-3 over the last six, which would be, you know, 500 over the end and put them at, you know, 7-9. So it's all a learning process. It's only year one, and they're still trending upward. But unfortunately, these bumps in the roads are things that sometimes make it very difficult to overcome.
For sure. Well, guys, looks like we're running time a little bit short, so let's keep our comments short and sweet. Swaff, start us out. Give us your thoughts on that Niners team getting beat up out there in San Francisco. Well, pretty much expect the beat down that they're taking right now.
They're in Seattle.
It's a rough program, and Blaine Gabbert, I don't think he'll be a placeholder for this team. I really do have a feeling that they're going to use the first-round pick on a quarterback, and maybe they, depending on, I'm sure they'll give him an opportunity to fight in the training camp and in the preseason, and maybe that person can win the job. You can't do any worse than Blaine Gabbert. I think Kaepernick has played his last games as a 49er. I got a feeling they'll try and trade him, or they'll cut him and try and make a maneuver, depending on what offensive lineman free agency looks like. So it's an uphill battle, and honestly, as a fan that respects the 49ers and what they've done, I really hope they lose all the rest of their games so they can get nice high draft picks, so that way there's less likelihood that Trent Baalke screws up the picks.
I'll say it like this. First and foremost, yeah, I hope they should lose all their games to get a high draft pick. But if they're stupid enough to spend it on a quarterback in this draft where there is zero quarterbacks worth a damn salt coming out, then they deserve to continue to lose 16 games a season for the next 5 years if that guy continues to step into the NFL and become a bust. Holding on to cap, starting Gabbert, cutting cap, and signing a veteran backup are the only options for the Niners, because there is zero in the draft for them to take outside of offensive linemen or maybe a running back, but they already have Carlos Hyde. O'Malley, your thoughts?
This is going to be one of those first drafts that we see where they're not pretty deep at the quarterback position. The last few, maybe not so much this last one, but the couple before were hella deep as far as quarterbacks go. So they're going to be kind of messed up as far as that situation is. My question really is more about the coaching staff than anything. Are they going to continue on with this coaching staff? Because I think that this coaching staff is as much, if not more, to blame for what's going on the field. I mean, other than Jed York being Al Davis 2.0, this coaching staff is kind of ridiculous. Tom Sula, I'm sorry, not ready to be a head coach, period. I don't care what anybody says. So I think that they need to explore a little bit more as far as coaching goes, although I'm not really sure what the coaching situation is going to look like, what's going to be out there after this season. So they're really up in the air right now as far as coaching, as far as quarterback position. Basically, everything is up in the air for the Niners right now. It would probably behoove them just to go ahead and lie down and lose the rest of their games and get the highest draft pick as possible. Not that it's necessarily going to even be a player that's going to be someone who can do something for them. So, I don't know. They've really, San Francisco, and we saw this before the season even started. I don't think that there is anybody who is actually sane who didn't think that this was going to be the outcome of the season. You know, I understand being a fan and, you know,
okay,
I've heard so many
minute.
Times.
Wait a minute. Coming from a Raiders fan that would back up
what,
a 2-10 team going into the season, really, you're telling
no,
Niners fans that they need
you
to give up
me.
On their
no,
team?
No.
Really?
That's not what
like,
I'm
give
saying.
Up on your squad just because of a couple of bad,
let
just
me,
of a half of
let
bad
me finish. Let me finish. That's not
okay.
what I'm saying. I'm not saying jump ship. I'm not saying don't be a fan. What I'm saying is there was a lot of people going into this season who were unrealistic. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying don't be a fan. I'm not saying don't support your team.
Okay.
I'll support my team if they go 0-16. But honestly, then the next season, I'm going to realistically look at, you know, who they've got is their players, who they've got is their coaches, and I'm going to look at it realistically and not going to be like, we're going to the Super Bowl.
Who in the
I'm
world
sorry.
Said that? They need to be slapped and shot.
Exactly.
I will agree with you. Any 49ers fan that walked into this season thinking that they had a shot at the playoffs needs to be slapped and shot.
That's just for their own benefit.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
It's not being a fan. It's not believing in your. Yeah, exactly. Being a Raider fan, we know. We understand. We've been beaten down year after year by you Niner fans thinking that you and your team are better than us. So, I mean, I understand what it's like to support a team. What's really sad to me is how much I've seen a lot of these Niner players or Niner fans, and you can't see me right now, but I'm doing the whole air quote thing because that's what a lot of it was. They made this move to Santa Clara, and a lot of these rich people bought, you know, PSLs and tickets and all of this, and now they're trying to sell them because, oh my gosh, their team hit a bump in the road. It happens. You know, empires fall and nations rise, and nations fall and empires rise. We've seen it year after year in the NFL and time after time, and it happens. Teams go through, it's such a cliche, but it's so true. Teams go through rebuilding phases. Now, granted, do I think that they have some of the right pieces as far as trying to rebuild their team? Absolutely not. I think they went completely wrong as far as coaching staff went. But I had friends who went into this going, I love being the underdog. Quest for six. We're still going to the Super Bowl. Don't count us out. And it's like, dude, you lost 98% of your team. And
well, okay.
Being a Raider fan, okay? Because we're sitting here talking about, you know, going 8-8 or going 9-7 or what have you. And I know that at the beginning of the season, all I kept saying was, man, if we go 8-8, our team, our coaches have done something amazing to have taken us to where we were at last year. And if we do just have a .500 season, that's still an amazing accomplishment. You know,
yeah.
It was other people who started talking about playoffs early on. It
yeah.
wasn't a lot of us like hardcore Raider fans because we know better. You know, you don't start talking about playoffs when there's only been four games at the beginning of the season.
Well, I can tell you this. I'll say it like this. If you want to talk about flipping the script, basically, and if you look at it, I'll say this. Where we dissipate and disagree as far as with the 49ers is I don't believe that anything that went wrong this season really had anything to do with coaching. Tom Sula is a defensive coach, and the defense has actually played fairly well this season, considering how much the defense lost, which was way more than what the offense lost this offseason. Now, offensively, they may want to go with a new offensive coordinator than Jeep Chris, but I don't think Tom Sula is the issue. Like, it's bad play. You got a quarterback that has no offensive line who's supposed to be this dynamic quarterback that can't get shit done without an actual offensive line. So it's like there's so many small cogs that fell apart in this 49ers team this season. I can't put it all on Tom Sula's head and say, well,
you need to go
because you suck as a coach. Like, if he was handed Harbaugh's team from 2011, he could probably go to the Super Bowl with him too. If Tom Sula was handed Harbaugh's team, you know who I blame it on?
It's not the coach. It's not the players. It's not whatever. It's Jet York. I blame it on him.
He made some bad moves.
It's just the moves that he's made have made no sense. I don't think the man has any football sense. Period. And
well,
in some
I can't
ways,
say that because he comes
I
from the
DeBarbaro
agree
the
fan.
Same thing. Yeah. Well,
like,
yeah.
I agree with you that Jed York is a problem, but I thought he had a better football mind, being that he's the nephew of Eddie DeBartolo, possibly one of the greatest owners in NFL history, the architect of the first Niners dynasty. So I thought York had some sense about him. he's proven to me with his actions that that sense is not there.
And his general manager is just as bad.
So,
but
push out.
I mean,
and I'm sorry,
greatest NFL owner ever was Al Davis. Now, granted, maybe not Al Davis in the last 15, you know, years, but if you want to look at, and this is where it's sad, because even a lot of Raiders fans, the younger ones, don't understand this. People make so much fun of Al Davis because of some of the decisions he made later on and where he shouldn't have been, where he should have relinquished control, which was one of his big problems. But what most people don't understand is the NFL is still alive today in large part because of things that Al Davis did years and years and years ago. You know,
he did amazing
things for the NFL.
But I said that that makes Al Davis a great man. It didn't necessarily make him the greatest owner of all time. I think the way that he treats his players is second to none. There's nobody that encompasses how you want an owner to treat their players post-career than how Al Davis treated it. But I think his major flaw, and where people have the right to come down hard on him, is the fact that Al Davis did not step aside when he should have. And he knew he shouldn't have, but reluctantly stayed there. But
I think
he's one of the greatest people of all time, greatest owners. I don't know. Like I do understand where you're coming from, but I just think that Al struggled in his late years with making the right decisions.
Absolutely.
That's all hindsight. The choices and decisions that he's made. So there's one thing that can't be denied. Al Davis wanted to win, and he made choices trying to win. He didn't make choices to save salary cap room. He worked the salary cap like a magician. You know, they said that, you know, it took, you know, 2 years for Reggie McKenzie to get the Raiders out of, quote-unquote, cap hell. But honestly, Al Davis never had that issue. He was still able to bring in talent and acquire players and hand out big money. And certain times, it didn't work. Javon Walker didn't work. Randy Moss, he was a quitter until, you know, I mean, let's be honest. Randy Moss in New England, had he done that for the Raiders, I mean, sure, we didn't have a Tom Brady throwing him the football, but still, that effort that he put out there for Tom Brady, had he done that as a Raider, that move would have paid off dividends. I mean, look at some of the draft picks. Mike Mitchell, he's killing it for Pittsburgh Steelers right now, but when Al Davis drafted him, everybody was like, oh, my God, Mike Mitchell, he's terrible. Why did you draft him? He's such a reach. And now, look, he's Pittsburgh Steelers starting safety, and he's laying out hits like thunder. So, I mean, there were moves that, you know, you can say moves didn't work out, but you can't say that he lost his touch on trying to find talent. He might have missed just as much as everybody else, or began to miss as much as everybody else. But the one unequivocal thing, just like I like about Eddie DeBartolo, Al Davis wanted to win. And there's a lot of owners in the NFL you can't even say that about. Bill Wells in Arizona, they lucked into winning when they brought in Kurt Warner. Before that, they had what? 40 years of losing. Look at the Patriots, Robert Kraft. He only just became the model franchise in the last 10 years. But before that, they had one Super Bowl season in which they got crushed by the Bears. But
and
other
why
than
was that,
that? They had,
why was
I mean,
that?
You know,
what happened in New England? Bill Belichick.
Yes, I mean, sometimes you make mistakes, but still, Al Davis was one of the greatest owners. I wouldn't say the
Absolutely.
Greatest because it's hard to separate the cream of the crop because, you know, you got your DeBartolos, you've got your you got your DeBartolos and you got your Al Davises, and you can't really separate all of them. They're basically a top-tier group, and Al Davis is definitely, even with the 10 or 15 years that people hold against him at the end of his career and end of his life, that still doesn't take him out of the top-tier box.
I 110% agree with you, and also look at it, too, from the point of how many have actually been around as long as he had? You know, he was there from the beginning. And you can't say that about, you know, a lot of the other owners or the other managers or whatever. And he worked his way up from coach to general manager to owner, you know, and he did a lot. And not just for the Raiders, but for the league as a whole. know, and being part of the orchestration of merging the AFL, you know, and keeping
a pioneer for
minorities,
pioneer for women.
Yes, and you know what? And one of the things that he always was about, and we talked about, you know, he touched on, you know, the love and respect in what he did for his players. You know, once, as far as Davis was concerned, with the exception of a few players, Randy Moss, Warren Sapp, what have you, once a Raider, always a Raider, period. That's why you have players like Nnamdi Asamoah, who came back and signed a day deal just to be able to retire as a Raider. And honestly, I see McFadden doing the same thing. Regardless of what goes on in Dallas, when he's done, I think he will come back and retire as a Raider.
I agree with your points, but where I was going wasn't saying that Al didn't deserve to be in the top three, top five, top two. What I'm saying is I can't necessarily – there are so many other owners that do so much. I'm sorry. Raiders fans don't like the Steelers, but the Rooneys are some of the best owners in football still to this day. They make the proper decisions. They make the right decisions, and they take care of their players. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger isn't exactly a good example of what makes a great Steeler, but if you go back through the years, Franco Harris, Terry Bradshaw, they've had some great guys.
Oh, yeah.
And if you listen to Terry Bradshaw talk about the Rooneys, they still take care of those players still to this day. I'm not saying Al isn't a great man. Al is an amazing man. But as far as stacking him immediately on top and saying that he's the best owner ever, I can't give him that. There's so many other owners that have done everything that he's done as well.
I said one of the best owners ever.
Okay.
Now, there was also a point at the end that, you know, a lot of people said that there were three owners in NFL who were detriments to their team. And that was Al Davis, Jerry Jones, and the jackass who owns the Washington Redskins. Now, I don't necessarily agree with the whole Al Davis thing because, again, like we just touched on, there were reasons. He had a method to his madness, even though he probably should have stepped down way before everything that happened. Then again, look at who he had to hand things over to. I'm not sure he really had the confidence in Mark to make the right decision, unfortunately. I mean, I hate to say it. But I actually, for the longest time, thought Mark Davis had no football sense, period. But I've done some research on him, and I've looked into some things and some stuff that happened with some, I mean, I don't think a lot of people know that Mark Davis and his dad didn't talk for years, especially down when they were in L.A. because of the whole situation. He turned into a manager or an agent because he didn't feel one of the players was getting – one of the best players was getting the treatment and the contract and everything that he deserved. And Al Davis basically said, okay, well, if that's how you feel, I'm kicking you out and you can go live with him. And that's actually what happened for years in L.A. So, I mean, for the longest time, I thought the man actually did not have any football sense whatsoever because some of the stuff that he was doing made no sense. But he actually knows more and is a lot more cunning than people give him credit for. So, you know, Al Davis, one of, not saying the, but one of the best in the history of the NFL. And especially if you take away the last, you know, 10 or 15 so years of his career and try to look at the things that he did prior to that, like, and you have to actually know history and love your team to know these things, to know that, you know, he was the first owner to successfully sue the NFL. Didn't really make him a fan of some of the people in the NFL, but still, You know, he was the first person, first coach, first owner to successfully sue the NFL. He looked out for his players, and he cared about his team. So did he always make the right decisions? No. Has any owner, any coach, any manager always made the right decision?
Always made it. Exactly.
So, I mean, look at it that way. You have to – it's this little thing called perspective that people have to kind of look at. And it's – yeah. I adore the man. I had an opportunity to meet him. I called him the Crypt Keeper. I'll still call him that because that's what he looked like in the end. But I adore the man, and I adore the legacy that – I mean, players would come – even when we had the worst record, just for the opportunity of playing for Al Davis.
All right, well, guys, we're going to have to leave that there. I got some other things I'm getting into for the Raw Impact Unleashed tonight, so I got to get going. Guys, another great show. Guys, those who listen in, thank you for listening.
Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
These people need to lay off Cam Newton. I've never really been a huge fan of Cam Newton. I didn't like him when he was at Auburn because I was in Georgia when all of this stuff was going on at Auburn. I have a ton of friends who absolutely adore him because they're Auburn alum. But, dude, lay off of Cam Newton. I loved his response when people were talking about his touchdown dances and his being in the end zone and people were complaining about that, and he said, well, stop letting me score. You know, I mean, this guy has actually done a lot for the community, and people need to find a life and something new to complain about. Lay off the kid. He's doing good things in Carolina, and just leave it at that. This thing has gotten all sorts of out of control. Period. I know that's not really a West Coast thing, but it's one of those things that really has kind of bothered me since last weekend, is that they just need to lay off the kid. Let him do his job. Let him score. Let him dance. Let him freaking do flip-flops in the background, in the end zone for all I care. If he's scoring and he's doing his job for his team, that's all that should matter.
Let him do it. Yeah. Suave, any last words?
Free Cam Newton.
All right, guys. So that'll do it for us this week. Be sure to listen in next week. I don't know what the fuck we're going to be talking about. Just listen in and find out. Don't forget tomorrow night, Raw Impact Unleashed. Thursday night, Raw Impact Unleashed. And you got Worlds of Blur and West Coast Bias. Till next week, y'all. Peace.
Peace.